Sitting here in my living room with Rita Abbott. It is August 1st, 1984. It's about 6:30 in the evening, and we're going to tape an interview with Rita. She is a longtime resident of New Hope, and this year she has consented to be the chairman of the Centennial. What is it, Jubilee?
Co-chairman.
Oh, co-chairman of the committee for the centennial celebration of St. Martin. What is it, St. Martin to what?
St. Martin of Tours.
Of Tours Church. But, and it has been in New Hope now for 100 years, is that right?
1985 will be 100 years.
1985 will mark the 100-year anniversary. I won't ask you how many years you've been in New Hope, Rita. But you were born in New Hope, weren't you?
That's correct.
Yeah, was it close? Was it right across the street from the church?
It was on New Street, right directly across the street from St. Martin's Church.
Was it in that little stone house there?
No, it's a stone house, double house.
Oh, is it a stucco house?
Yeah.
Goodness. And I understand that your father worked as a mason, is that right?
That's right. He was a contractor, a builder in New Hope for many years. He worked on the canal.
He did.
Did a lot of the stonework. Built a lot of the walls for the canal. And when I was growing up in that area, every child in New Hope learned to swim in the canal.
He did.
Which was always clean because it was used for transportation in those years. We learned to swim with usually a parent or an older sibling holding a rope that was tied around our waist and walking along the canal bank. And when we could swim by ourselves across the canal, we thought we were as proud as though we swam the English Channel.
Oh, I bet you were. And tell me about the St. Martin's Church. It wasn't always on that site, was it?
Yes.
Wasn't it built across the river or something like that? Didn't I hear someone say that it had started across and...
This is only history we have found out now since we are researching. The parishioners from St. Martin's, or from New Hope, before there was a St. Martin's, used to attend Mass in St. John's in Lambertville.
Oh, I see.
And at that time, before 1885, there was a covered bridge, which was destroyed in the ice freshet of 1903. They didn't, I understand, didn't have to pay the 2 cents toll when they crossed the covered bridge to go to Mass. But I don't remember that far back.
Oh, of course not. I didn't mean that. But someone was saying that they thought that the building had been moved bodily.
No.
From another location.
That's not
to the top of the hill, so then I was misinformed about that. But the church was built on that site then before the turn of the century.
That's correct.
And it at one time was considered quite a obscure little parish and sort of a little...
For many years it was a very small, in numbers, very small parish. There were, I believe in 1885, there were 25 families. As late as 1928, there were 42 families in the parish. There was a very static community in those years. It was in the early 30s, possibly, maybe the late 20s, when the influx of artists and writers, theatrical people, began to move into the area.
In the 20s?
In the 20s and 30s.
I see.
There were a great many artists here before that, but let's say that Broadway didn't discover it. The Sam and Bella Spivak, Dorothy Parker, George Coffin, Moss Hart, those people starting to buy up the farmland, the old farmhouses, the beautiful old Bucks County stone houses. was in the early 30s. And then the changes began.
Do you think the Playhouse, the Bucks County Playhouse, do you think that started the trend of Broadway discovering New York?
No, I don't think so. I think that that was a culmination. The Playhouse was a culmination of the people who lived here, because a great many of them lived here before that. And for instance, Don Walker is a native of the area,
yes,
and was very instrumental in the Playhouse starting here. I remember the night the Playhouse opened.
Really?
Huffnagel Press. It was started by Barbara, who was then Barbara Evans, Barbara Penrose now, who lives up in Trumansburg, New York, but for in 1932 came to live in New Hope, seeking her ancestors who were the Inghams.
Oh my goodness.
Her mother was an Ingham. And she and her brother Charles Evans, who was a well-known artist and the first designer for Sinden Terrell's Music Circus, both bought homes in New York. Barbara was printing the programs, 1939. John Francis Myers, who now owns the Canadian Hospital, came to New York, 1939, opened John Francis Beauty Spot. He was a hairdresser, opened the shop. At that point, Huffnagel Press phone was answered. Huffnagel Press, John Francis Beauty Spot, Bucks County Playhouse, because the office was taking ticket reservations, appointments for the hairdresser, or answering the phone for Huffnagel Press. Huffnagel Press printed for many years the program for Bucks County Playhouse. The night the Playhouse opened, I happened to take the programs down and heard the hammering on the door, worked my way through the crowd, went up and pounded on the door, and they're saying it's not open, and we're saying, open the door, so here are the programs. They were still hammering the seats down in the Playhouse. Don Hedges, who was the architect, was one of the ones that was hammering the seats down, so that Harry Hirschfield was standing out on the bridge doing his sketch for the New York Times while this was going on.
I think it's a great journey.
It was fascinating then because it was, in my opinion, before New Hope was ruined. And New Hope deserves what they got because they allowed it to happen, and that was just absolutely incredible that they would allow what has happened to that town to happen, because it was absolutely sensational. If there were special people, and in those days of the Playhouse, you had a feeling of talent, and everybody seemed involved in it. All the local people went to the theater. You would go down the street and you would run into the resident company. They felt at home there. People like Louis Calhern, Haley Stoddard, William Bendix, who at various times, Jimmy Coco, various times through the years were in the resident company. It was very special. We didn't ever miss a show. When the shows would change, we'd always go to the shows. And it was special.
Wasn't it kind of overwhelming to have been such a kind of a sleepy little small town on a river, and then to be sort of overtaken by Broadway and all these celebrities? Didn't it sort of go to their heads, so to speak?
You mean to the town?
To the town?
I don't think so. I think that the town felt that, they thought it was very special.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very special. But it was in an entirely different context than now. Because the town was so special then. It was still a resident town. There was no honky-tonk. And the Playhouse was never honky-tonk. The Playhouse that had been a mill, and we all remembered in the town, we all remembered the mill and the mill race and going swimming down there, and Lou Graham with running the mill there, the farmers coming in. We remembered those things. And it was, we thought it was very unique, and a lot of us thought that they were a little weird, some of the people that came in. But, and it was a something that was done with pride, but it was done with such class that I think it was appreciated.
Yeah. Did you, I read something about the Playhouse. I understand that there were some really very important people who came to play at the Playhouse. Helen Hayes with her daughter, Grace Kelly.
Grace Kelly's first appearance. Couldn't learn her lines. Was a movie actress, not stage.
Oh, really? And I understand Helen Hayes stayed across the street at the Logan Inn with her daughter. And they put many of the people up at the
Logan. A great many of them stayed at the Logan Inn, yes.
Mm-hmm. And did you see them in the streets?
You would see them and you'd pass them on the street and they'd say good morning or what. The one I remember the most who was absolutely charming was William Bendix, because he was so great. He played Mr. Kimber in, the one part I do remember then was Mr. Kimber and George Wiseman stuck here.
Now, you said that you saw, that you liked William Bendix, and was there someone else that you fondly remembered that was attached to the Playhouse?
Well, of course, Edward Horton, who played Springtime for Henry. I believe that was the opening show.
Did you get in to see those?
We went to the shows every time they changed.
Really? Well, how about Main Street in those days? What did it look like? Was it, did it have the same flavor that it has today?
No, it wasn't honky-tonk.
Take me down Main Street back in, like, say, 1930. What did it look like? Or not in 1930, but in the 30s.
There was an A&P store where the drugstore is today. There was an American store where the Village store is.
What's an American store?
They're now Acme Markets.
Oh, I see.
But then there were American stores where you had clerks waiting on you. It wasn't a supermarket then, of course. Criers was there. Next door to Criers, where Gurenscher's is, was a drugstore. Then came Dr. Flood's house. Where the mall is was a garage, Worthington's garage. There was a grocery store where the Huffnagel Press, Franklin Press is today. Of course, the Perry Mansion was where it is, always has been. There was a co-op where the Delaware Bookshop is. Co-op store. Now I'm running these together and I don't know the time frame because the Acme Market had moved out before the co-op came in. In the late 30s, a co-op started in a store where the Golden Pump is now as a buyer's club. Probably 1936. There was a buyer's club started. Maybe before that, it was during the Depression that they started as a buyer's club and then started the co-op store on the corner of South Main and Mechanic Street. Later moving up to where the Delaware Bookshop is now. Where the picnic basket is, was Huffnagel Press. Next door to the co-op market was a house, which was later moved. Where the Strawberry Jam is, was a tavern. Just beer. Tavern. Very few bars in town at that time.
How about if I ran down South?
Yeah, South Main Street was all residential.
It was. Goodness.
The first, I think the town hall was where the, is it the community center it's called now, next to Carlos on Mechanic Street? Mechanic Street was all residential. South Main Street was all residential.
I understand the town hall was a jail.
That's correct. There were two, it was the town hall and it was also a local lockup. There were two cells in there, I believe, as I recall it. We used to have Halloween parties and various things in there when we were kids growing up. Across from that was a grocery store on the corner of South Main and Mechanic Street. Joe Hogan's. It was a store where a man would come around and take orders, and then he would deliver the orders. And most of the children in town would run down to Joe Hogan's store to pick up what was needed. The mothers would call them in and say, get down to Joe Hogan's and get so-and-so. He had a sugar barrel, and when you paid the bill, most people ran a tab, and when they paid the bill, the kids loved to go in because they got penny candy. And you could go in and splurge with your 2 cents and buy candy in there. Further down, on down the street, it was all residential. It was the first thing that went down there, I guess, was Bear's Tavern, which is now Fran's Pub.
How about medical assistance back in those days? Where did you go if you got sick? Was there a hospital close by?
Doylestown Hospital was the closest hospital. Most people in the area went to a Trenton hospital. Of course, you didn't go to the hospital very often in those days. Doylestown, of course, was a very tiny hospital, which is now just an apartment house. But you would go to one of the Trenton hospitals. There were three and four in Trenton then that I know of. The Lambertville Ambulance Association, which was there before the rescue squad, had the ambulance that would take you to the hospital. There was there were two doctors, I believe, in New Hope at that time, Dr. Leiby and Dr. Wallace. Several doctors in Lambertville. So the medical care was fine because you had general practitioners that would come to the house. There were a great many times when you were quarantined with them.
They quarantined you? And would they put signs on the door in the older days?
Oh, yes. If anyone in the family was ill, and it was diphtheria, chickenpox, any of those diseases, no one was allowed out of the house. If you weren't sick, it was fine sometimes, unless your dog took your shoes and ran away with them, which my dog did one time. With shoes I had just cleaned and set out to get in the sunlight because they were my first communion shoes.
But what were some of the diseases the children had in those days? You mentioned
diphtheria.
Diphtheria.
Chickenpox.
Chickenpox.
Scarlet fever.
Some of the things we don't see today.
That's right. Incidentally, the present Dr. Leiby had an uncle, Dr. Leiby, who was in town prior to his being in town. And he was the doctor for many years in New Hope.
Now you mean he was here in what, the 30s?
And possibly even in the 20s.
Possibly.
He was here in the 30s, yes.
So, and you were talking a little earlier about your family too, Rita. You said that your mother had 11 children, but she raised 8 children.
That's correct.
Yes. And you had how many brothers and sisters?
I had a brother who, the first two children died. Then I had a brother who died at the age of 11. And there were 6 girls and 2 boys left. And they all stayed in this area except for 2 of them. one of them going to the West Coast and one of them living in North Jersey. All the others stayed in this area.
You mentioned having a picture of Ted Corrigan with your brother, taken in 1926.
Yeah, at the latest it was 1926. It possibly was 1925. But it was when we had the processions at St. Martin's Church. And there were a lot of the local people in that picture.
Yeah. How about that?
Out of school.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to the school. Did you go to the school that was up on the hill?
Yes, off Mechanic Street.
Off Mechanic Street.
And the high school was also there, and the high school was a prefab building. They had all 12 grades up there. From first grade through eighth was in the old stone building, which is still there. Then they had the high school in a prefab building, which when the present high school opened on September the 9th, 1932, I believe, they sold that prefab to Thompson Memorial Church. Many years later, it was burned down before they built their present parish facility.
Oh.
But we used to have a great time going to that elementary school. And many a big geography book was ruined because they were great to slide down the hill in the snow.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you remember some of your books? I mean, did you have certain books that you were fond of?
I don't remember any specific books except that the geographies were very big.
Yeah, I remember that too. How about McGuffey's Reader? You didn't
know
one
of
those?
Oh, yes. Not the books, but the cards that went up in the first grade where you were learning your letters. And Miss Higgins was the teacher there forever.
Oh, she was. Now that you each, it was each grade had a teacher then. It wasn't like one.
It wasn't like a one classroom.
One classroom.
No. And some of the teachers may have shared, but it was separate rooms. And you may have had two classes in one room, but you didn't go from room to room to classes. They had classrooms that had like a sliding panel between them, which they could open for assembly period.
Oh, that was nice. What did you think of the kind of education you got there as compared to today's?
I don't think there's any comparison because you were educated then. You had respect for your teachers, and if you got in trouble in school, you were scared to death because you got in more trouble when you went home, instead of the parents today blaming the teachers for everything. So you had it both ways then. You had to behave in school because your parents found out about it, and you'd better not say anything that happened at home to your teachers.
It seemed to me a pretty happy job, and there was little to be afraid of. Somebody mentioned that there were gypsies camped up on the top of the hill there. Did you ever see gypsies?
The gypsies used to camp down where the Legion parking lot is now.
Oh.
And we were fascinated by them. What frightened us more, but we loved her dearly, was Ursula Britton, who lived up on the old Windy Bush, just beyond the John Bradley property. She had a tiny cabin up there, and she was a black lady who used to walk into town completely clad in black, with a black hat, black coat, even, as I recall, in summer, wore a coat that came almost to her ankles. She would go into the Joe Hookham store, which I mentioned before, and or out to A&M's store out on the Old York Road, and ask for drop sugar. She'd want a pound of drop sugar because she'd think it was cheaper. They never give her drop sugar, but it was
drop sugar.
Drop sugar would be some maybe that spilled, and she thought maybe they'd give it to her a little cheaper.
Oh.
But they would give her the sugar, I believe, a little cheaper. They didn't give her drop sugar, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But she used to frighten us. Although she never did anything to frighten us, it was just the image of her that we used to feel a little intimidated by, but she was a great character and part of our growing up years.
Were there any other black people in the area?
Oh, sure.
Was there a black town or a black section?
No.
A black section of town?
That is the marvelous thing about growing up in a small town in the country where you get to know people one-on-one.
Right.
And they were marvelous people who lived here and always were treated with respect because they deserved to be treated with respect, the same as we hope to be.
There was someone who said they remembered that there was a certain section in this area that where five people lived in a cluster. And you can't remember anything.
There were like a couple of houses, maybe three houses in a row where people lived. I can name now one area where there were three houses where black people lived, and two other separate houses where black people lived. One of them, the beautiful stone house by the canal bridge on Ferry Street, which until very recently, the Ida Carter and the Pickers, it was the Picker home, and they lived there. A very highly respected family lived there all my growing up years and until maybe 15 years ago when they died.
And all the children went to school with you?
That's right.
They were in the school with you?
Yes.
As well.
Uh-huh. And then the Petersons, who are very well thought of and always lived in town, and grew up with us and went to school with us. And if there were any problems, we were not aware of them.
You mentioned another a family named Bear, and someone who was in the fishing business.
Captain Bear was a Scarborough. Ellen DeVitt is her sister, and they had the fishery on this side of the river for many, many years, and a lot of history goes with that shad fishery that was on this side of the river.
And what about her father?
Her father was drowned in the river.
And what was there a special date connected with that? Was it some?
I have no idea when it was. I know it was when the children were very small.
I see.
So I would suggest that it was probably early in this century.
Oh my! I thought it was some terrible event that happened. You know, when the river rose.
I don't think
something.
it was at flood time or anything like that.
I
now.
See. So, well, we've talked quite a bit about the school, but, you know, I'd like to go back to the church, if you don't mind, for a minute, because I've heard you speak about going to play at the Priestie's. Do you remember that? And you and Mary McNamara.
The field that is adjacent to the rectory,
mm-hmm.
at the corner of New and Mechanic Street, was always referred to by all the children in the area as the Priestie, which translated meant the priest's field. We had many a ball game there, or the games of Follow the Arrow or Fox and Geese that we would play almost every summer night would originate there. And when the flowers came out in the spring, all the girls in the area would be up there picking the violets that grew. Violets and crepe myrtle was up there, and we used to call them bluebells, but there were grape hyacinths that used to grow up there, and we would pick them. Above the cemetery, we would go to pick the berries that grew in profusion, blackberries and raspberries. But whoever had a glove and had a bat would come out and say, you're ready to play ball, and we would always welcome to play there. In the winter, we would start sledding up by the church and come down. We would hit the bank at the corner of Mechanic and New Street, and that would carry us all the way down over the canal bridge, and we would end up by the river if we were lucky. There was very little automobile traffic, because even though some people had cars, the tires weren't that great to drive in snow. There weren't that many places to go.
Oh my.
And we'd have someone down at the foot of Mechanic Street on Main Street. And if a car was coming and the the sledders were on their way down the hill, they would stop the traffic. As a matter of fact, we did the same thing on Bridge Street. If you can imagine sledding down there with the traffic today, but
no,
many
can't.
A time we did that. And always skated on the canal.
Uh-huh.
Swim in the summer on the canal.
Okay, Rita, we're still speaking with Rita Abbott, and we were asking questions about the research that she's been doing on the new, on the centennial celebration of St. Martin's in New Hope. And I asked the question about research on the various pastors and their succession, and Rita was answering about Father Strummel, is that right, Rita? Father Strummel. Who started the parish in what,
1885.
85, my word.
He was never the pastor, but he was responsible for starting the parish. It was a very small parish and remained so for many years, up until research has shown us that in 1928 there were still only 42 families in the parish. It has now grown to 225 families. And encompasses 125 square miles. It's not just New Hope, although everyone thinks of it as New Hope's church.
Now, who came out? Who was the first parish priest then here? Do you remember?
I don't remember the
name of the
earliest priest. I unfortunately don't remember the names. I don't remember the names until Father Hassan, who was here during the teen years, followed by Reverend John Fleming, that most of the old New Hopers remember because he came in 1921 and was here until 1945, I believe.
That was a long time to be around, wasn't it?
Yes, as one of the former parishioners said, in all her growing up years, she only knew one priest because we only had one here.
And that was Father Fleming.
In his later years, because of ill health, he had other priests that would come for the weekend, and they were oblates of St. Francis from Northeast Catholic in Philadelphia, but they were only weekend priests. We had no daily masses in those days, just because the priest was not able to do it because of his health. Father Fleming was followed by Father Gowan, who was followed by Father Mara. Then came Father Bolton, I guess, was next to Father Mara, and then Father Sherry, and then Father Carey, who was the present pastor.
Yes. Now, I understand that the church had a very antique look about it for many years, of course, because it was built in 95. But that George Nakashima, a local architect and artist, did some work on it in about 25 years ago?
In 1960,
when
Father Bolton was here. And previous to that, the walls and the ceiling were pressed tin. There was a very large wooden altar. And of course, pre-Vatican II, there were a lot of saints and angels in the church that are no longer there, although we have beautiful statues in there now. But the whole flavor of the inside of the church has changed. It's much lighter. And thank God the exterior was never changed because of the beauty of the stone. So we're very fortunate that it was a beautiful church to start with and we didn't have to do that much on the outside. Interestingly enough, for many years, there was a bridge that connected the rectory to the church. I've heard two reasons for that being there, one of them being because of the infirmity of the priest. The other, which is much more likely, is that the priest was intelligent enough to connect the rectory to the church, thereby saving taxes on the residence, which is taxed as long as it is a separate unit. When it was connected to the church, there was no tax, had to be paid on it.
How about that?
the bridge was taken down in 1960 also, when the renovations were done to the church. And the basement of the church also, up until late through the 50s and into the 60s, the basement floor, at least half of it, was still a dirt floor. And then the renovations were done there to make it the attractive room that it now is.
I think it's the most beautiful church I have ever seen, and I love it. I love being a member of it.
That's good, because the setting is just exquisite.
Oh, I think it's exquisite. I just count myself very fortunate to be a part of it.
Now, interestingly enough, when the grounds are so beautiful, and when Father Fleming was there during the 20s and 30s, he loved flowers, and just within the past few days I was talking to a former parishioner who said that he had to take care of the plants there, and he cut the grass, and he knows that there were 144 peony bushes because he always had to take care of them. And in the spring, everybody in the area, regardless of their denomination, got a big bouquet of flowers from Father Fleming.
Oh, what a nice gesture. He must have been a nice man.
They were delivered all over the area.
What a wonderful thing to do, really.
They were very beautiful.
Yeah. When did Charlie come? Did he come with Father Terry, or was he before?
Charlie came with Father Gallen.
Now that's Charlie. What is his last name?
Charlie Shea
was the sexton.
He's the sexton, and he's been here since 1943, I believe.
And where was he from? He was from Philadelphia?
Yes, originally. I think he was from Philadelphia. And he came here with Father Gallen when Father was made pastor. There was another young man came with them at that time who acted also as a sexton at the church. And the two of them took care of the church and grounds. He died a few years ago, George Wieskert.
Mm-hmm.
But the two of them came with Father Gallen.
And I understand that cornerstone that was laid in 1885 is going to be opened in September.
We hope to open in September the 16th, 1984. Remove the contents, examine the contents, hope to ooh and ah over them because there'll be something interesting in there, and then prepare whatever is inside the cornerstone to receive the update for 1985, when we will have our celebration and we will enclose the current things, pictures of the new altar, for instance, that George Nakashima did that is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The renovations of the rectory, which are changed. We're hoping to find old pictures in there. We know some of the things that are in there, like coins supposedly are in there, local newspapers of that date, and public officials. So we would hope to update those things to put the ones in that are relevant to today's church.
And for the centennial, have you had the help of some of the citizens of New Hope from the past? Are there any particular people that you would like to name, or that have been especially helpful to you and Dick Howard?
Yes, we've approached a lot of the old parishioners and or former ones. Some of them still live here, some of them are former ones. For instance, the man who was the first person baptized in the parish was Thomas Keenan, whose son George Keenan lives in Doylestown and is married to Rita Islow, whose brother Bob Islow is postmaster Newton. Margaret McGinn Loughran has always been a member of this parish and has been helpful. Ellen Tiernan Hilliard is an old parishioner. Catherine Scarborough Bear, Ellen Scarborough DeWitt, Mary McNamara, Owen Markey are some of the parishioners that have been here for many years and have been most helpful to us.
How about the Flood family? Were they?
the Flood family, there are not many still live in the area, but they have been contacted, and hopefully they will be coming through with their memories and maybe some pictures that we can incorporate in our nostalgia night, which will be in October at the church.
Oh, wonderful. Now, you're also going to publish a book, and how is the publication going on that, and who is doing that?
It's doing very well. We're having a lot of research done. We've also already researched the original 1985 local newspapers, the Doylestown paper. We have gone to the archives at the seminary.
Or at St. Charles?
At St. Charles Borromeo in Overbrook. Since it's a small parish, there is not a great deal that we can find in official records, but we're probing every word we can find, and we're going to come up with a lot of interesting little tidbits.
I understand
that we hope to put together.
Excuse me. I think that someone said that you had the first confirmation.
We have found a card that belonged to someone who was confirmed the day that the church was dedicated, and incidentally, it is a family member of Alice Macaulay Black, who has been very helpful with old photographs and information from her family, who are McDonalds, that have lived in our old New Hopers and were in the parish for many years.
Wonderful. Rita, I'd like to ask if you can remember special characters in town that might be interesting to talk about. Maybe some of them you'd rather not mention, but did you have a town drunk, for instance?
Oh, sure. Always, at all times, a town has their, quote, town drunk. And we had one who was delightful in my growing up years. Everybody knew him. He was perfectly harmless to everybody in the world but himself.
Oh. Would he do anything to treat the children, or...?
No, he just kept very much to himself
and
was very quiet, and everybody sort of took care. We also had another character that was marvelous, and when we were very small children, we loved to go with our dad down to visit him, and he was the blacksmith for the canal company. He was down on he had a little place on the towpath, and what fascinated us was that when he would have his lunch, he would put little crumbs of cheese out for his mice that used to run around. And we thought he was wonderful.
He did.
We would often go down to the lock to watch them open the locks. And occasionally, since our dad worked on the canal, they would put us on the boat and let us go through the lock. And that was fun. Or they would take us up the canal when the boats went through. Another thing about the boating, I don't know the time frame. I would probably suggest that my memory would be that it would be maybe once a month. What they called the mud digger would come through, and then the kids in town were always furious because we couldn't go swimming for a couple of days. It would rile up the mud from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about swimming in the canal, don't think of the canal as you see it today. Think of it as running water, since it was used then for the barges, were working barges then that would bring coal down to the Philadelphia area, Camden, Philadelphia, that area. And many times a day the lock would open so that the water was always moving and it was quite clean.
Mm-hmm. When did they stop the traffic, the barge traffic on the river? I mean, on the canal.
I would think it was probably, and I don't remember this specifically at all, but I would think it was probably in the middle 30s.
I see. And was New Hope a stopping place? Did you have a lot of canal men stopping in the town for refreshments or to stay overnight? Or?
I wouldn't be aware of that at all. I was only aware of the people who lived in the town. And I don't
remember at all that when they were on the boats they would get through, there were always the boats that came through that the people lived on. There were a great many
really?
Of the canal people lived right on the boats.
Oh, I didn't know that. Not families, just
families. Would,
oh,
no,
really?
No, families wouldn't live on them. In fact, there was maybe 2 weeks ago in the Beacon, there was an article about a woman in Lambertville who was one of the canal people. And I don't know whether, I don't remember even whether that was this canal or the one in Lambertville,
mm-hmm.
because they were talking about the Lambertville, the celebration they're having in connection with that canal right now.
Mm-hmm.
One of our big pastimes when we were teenagers, too, was walking that river bridge. Because there was a movie in Lambertville then. There was a bowling alley in Lambertville then. And we always found plenty to do. It was fortunate that maybe for us that we did not have a great many things, because the one thing we never found was boredom. We were always too busy to be bored. We never had enough time to do all we wanted to do. And that is rather sad for the people today that don't know how to do anything but watch television. Maybe the young people have never had to entertain themselves. We always entertained ourselves. It was always a ball game that we made up, or jumping rope, or roller skating on the streets. There was a skating rink in Lambertville for many years also. But we always managed to stay busy.
How about dating? Did you date the boys from across the river, or did
you
stay?
Oh, sure.
You
wouldn't go out with a newer boy if there was one from Lambertville.
Where did you go on dates?
Well, we'd go to a movie or a walk. And lots of times it was a walk. There were picnics. We used to picnic a lot. We walked a great deal, too. We would go on hikes. We would go out and do things that people don't even think of today. We would look forward to the fall. There was a neighbor of mine that I seemed always to go with him and his family to get black walnuts. All the boys in the town, or a great many of them, all is an exaggeration, but a great many of them, would have brown fingers for weeks in the fall because they would hull the walnuts. But everyone would have a little trench made on their roof, or maybe a little fence would be a better term, to hold the walnuts that were up there drying out so we could have them later in the year in candy or cakes or something like that. But everyone went out and got hickory nuts and black walnuts. You would pick whatever was out. Everybody had a garden. You would pick wildflowers. You would make it a point to go do these things. In the spring, you would go to Buckingham Mountain to pick the trailing arbutus, because that was a special thing. You would go out to Deer Park and get the cat and nine tails, because they were great when you had the parades to light. There were no torches, so they were your torches, stuck in kerosene. Rita, you asked about what was in the store. You had your barrel of sugar, but you also had your kerosene. And you would go maybe to get 5 pounds of potatoes or some sugar or... And these things, remember, were measured out into bags and weighed there. They weren't pre-packaged.
Mm-hmm.
You would take a can and get kerosene. Very often, you would see somebody coming up the street with a little kerosene can, and there was a corn cob in it because they had lost the cap.
Oh, dangerous.
But we didn't think of those things as being dangerous.
Terrible. I remember as a child having a game like rabbits and chickens that would be slaughtered and waiting for you to purchase. That was my city life. Did you ever have anything like that?
Everyone
here... They would be in barrels.
No, because everyone here went out and hunted.
Oh.
And getting back to the connection between the church and the town, we had a neighbor one time who was very surprised to find out that the Catholics didn't have a hunter's mass. They always, for many years, she thought it was so nice that the Catholics always had a mass for good luck to the hunters, because we had it the 1st of November, the day that the hunting season opened.
Oh.
She didn't realize it was one of our holy days where we always had a mass.
Oh, my goodness.
But all the Catholics would go to that mass, and then they would go out hunting, where the others maybe got a little drop on them, would go out earlier to hunt. But everyone would go out to hunt small game. There were a great many pheasants and rabbits and squirrels around. There was a lot of trapping, too.
What would you catch?
Groundhog.
Oh, really?
Or possum. There was coon hunting at night.
Would you eat them?
Oh, yes. And they would get snappers.
Oh,
snapping
snappers.
Turtles.
To make, oh, yes.
And make snapper stew was a big thing. And there were certain people in the town that it was... you should question Jim McGill about his dad making the snap. I believe his dad used to use some of the wild game and entertain friends with the meals he would cook using it, or maybe Jim's mother did it, but I remember that as one of the things Dr. McGill did.
Somebody made snapper stew, not snapper
soup? Yeah, there was snapper stew and snapper soup. And certain people would look forward to that. There was a place on Bridge Street. We'll go up Bridge Street now. We went down Main. We'll go up Bridge Street.
Okay.
We had, you asked about characters. We had the mail service in the early days. The train would come into Lambertville, and I believe it was three times a day, a man from Lambertville had a push cart that he would bring the mail across the bridge. We always got service. It did not take 10 days to get a letter from Lambertville to New Hope. Then if it was mailed in the morning, it would be delivered into the mailbox before the day was over in New Hope, because Sheenie Gillick would push the push cart across the bridge, and then he would pick up the mail from New Hope and take it over to Lambertville. The post office would be open Christmas morning. A man by the name of Ed Dubbs was the postmaster for many years, and the post office at that time was on the corner where, up until recently, the Selective Eye was located. Next door to that, where the Tony Sarg is, was Walker's Market, which was a meat market.
Oh, I see.
Across the street was Matthew's store, where they were very famous for their oyster stew.
Mm.
Chap Matthews is retired from the post office, and he still lives in that area.
Mm-hmm.
On Ferry Street, where the cheese shop now is, was Mrs. Austin's store. Now, she had a long counter, and it was just filled with penny candy. And we would go in there and she was the most patient woman, as I look back, that ever lived, because she never hurried us. The men would go in there and buy cigarettes and cigars, and I guess pipe tobacco. And she had chewing gum and candy in there. And the children loved to go to Mrs. Austin's store. When the school was located at its present location, we'd often stop in there at lunchtime, because we would come home for lunch. Only the children from out of town would stay for lunch. There were very few of the local ones. We would go home for lunch and then go back to school.
Oh.
So we got a lot of exercise in those days.
I guess you did.
The library was located down in what is the bank now. You went into the library from the Bridge Street side of the bank. In fact, you went into the bank from the Bridge Street side of the bank.
Oh, yes.
Where the porch is now, the left-hand side, there was a door where you went into the bank, and on the right-hand side, you would go in the library was there. And they all also had the Well Babies Clinic in there.
Oh,
I have
goodness.
A marvelous picture of a lot of people who are ready to retire now, when they were in their mother's arms, going into that Well Babies Clinic.
Oh, isn't that terrific?
Like Bud Newhart, Huffnagle Press.
Really?
Rita Abbott. Yes.
Oh, and Rita Abbott, too. Oh, dear. Well, I can't think of anything else to ask you, Rita, but what else would you like to contribute? Is there anything else? This has been such fun.
The Brickyard. I wonder how many people remember the Brickyard. I don't remember the silk mill being in operation. I remember it before it was in ruins, when it was just one structure, not just walls. I don't remember it ever being in operation, although older members of my family talked about having worked there. But I do remember the Brickyard out on Stony Hill Road when it was in operation. One of my brothers worked out there, and in the summer, we used to go out there just before noon with his lunch, and it was marvelous to know that place and see them making the bricks and firing the, I guess you called them the kilns. Mm-hmm. We do remember that. That, in those days, was a dirt road. And it was a dirt road for many, many years. It must have been into the 40s before it was finally paved.
You mean Stony Hill Road?
Stony Hill Road, yes.
Yeah, now the silk factory was on Sugan, wasn't it?
It's at the corner of Stony Hill and Sugan Road.
Yeah. And that was a, actually, they had silkworms. Didn't they?
I have no idea. I only know it was a silk mill. The only person I know who might know any, could be able to answer any questions about that is Peg Noster, whose father, Ed Fitzgerald, worked there. And she has told me stories. I don't know how much she remembers about the stories he told her, but at one time he did work there. I had a sister who is no longer living, who worked there at one point, but I don't remember when that was in operation.
Well, how about the manufacturing down on the river? Was that always there?
The paper mill?
Yeah, the paper mill. Was that a luggage factory also? Or?
No, at one point after the paper mill closed, the York Luggage rented a space in there and stored, I think they only warehoused in there. I don't think they ever manufactured there. But the paper mill and the bag mill kept the town going for many, many years.
That's what employed all the local people.
That's right, the ones that didn't work in the rubber mill in Lambertville.
I see.
They were the two factories in New Hope that operated for many, many years, and you better be a Republican if you wanted a job in one of the...
Really?
Absolutely.
And how about transportation? Wasn't there a trolley or something that came...
There was a trolley, but it was not in my lifetime.
This was a long time ago.
I don't remember the trolleys at all. They were gone before I came, but they came up Main Street, I believe, up the River Road and then up Main Street. And I think they crossed over to Lambertville, but I really... I have no idea about that. I don't have any memory of that.
It seems that it would be such a precipitous ride up.
It must have been marvelous. But then, you know, it was wonderful because we had the train.
Mm-hmm.
The Reading train went right into Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And in Lambertville, you could get Pennsylvania Railroad. And that was very confusing to me as a child, why the Pennsylvania was in New Jersey, but it was. You could go. That was a very active train, and you could go to Trenton on that, and a great many commuters commuted to Trenton to either work or school.
Oh, I see.
Ryder College was in Trenton many years ago, and a great many young people commuted on the train to Trenton to go to Ryder College, and then a great many commuted to go to work down there. And it was a great treat to get on the train and go down to Philadelphia. Also, one of the big things around here was if you could go to down to Willow Grove, that was marvelous. And
there was an amusement park?
That was a sensational amusement park in Willow Grove. Yeah. And there was also a lot of picnics at Deer Park.
Oh. Where is Deer Park?
Deer Park is out at Ingham Lake.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It's a...
Church of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, yes. Okay, I know where you mean. Yes, that's where Dr. Judy's little house is now.
Well, a lot of people used to have picnics at there.
Oh, my goodness. And how about, what would you bring to picnics? What kind of food was it?
Typical picnic food, as I recall, somebody would always have potato salad and deviled eggs and sandwiches. You know something else
beer?
We had that I had? I don't think we ever had. Well, I can remember homebrew, but you didn't have beer in those days. You're forgetting
right.
About Prohibition. I wasn't here before Prohibition. You know something else we had was Chautauqua.
What's that?
And that was marvelous. It used to be up on North Main Street. And they would put up a tent, and it was probably the most boring thing in the world, but it was something that would come around and they would have lectures, and it was just so exciting. And another entertainment feature was that there were people that used to come around and would get someone to sponsor an entertainment, a theatrical production. And local people would be in the cast, and they were a lot of fun. Worthington's Hall, which is on Ridge Street and Stockton Avenue, had probably the best dance floor of any place in the country. All the proms were held there, all the graduations were held there, all the plays, class night, everything was, you name it, it was at Worthington's Hall, which was upstairs, and they had a absolutely beautiful dance floor. They would have plays there, and then in later years they had them at the Playhouse, but by then we were getting very sophisticated with professional plays, so we didn't do the little ones so much. A great many, we used to have marvelous minstrel shows, and there were people that you always counted on being in those, singers and entertainers. We had our local band.
Oh, these were our local, this was
all
local,
local
talent.
People, all local talent. I don't know that it was a great deal of talent, but it was a lot of fun. And there were a lot of people that thought they could do a lot of things, and we thought they were great.
Of course, why not? You know what, I think at one time you mentioned the fact that there was a ghost up in the, somewhere. Where was it, up in the hill?
On the Windy Bush at the cemetery.
Oh, at the Windy Bush Hill. Okay.
Yeah, there's a cemetery there. And supposedly there was or is a ghost up there. And I'll tell you who could maybe give you more information about it is Betsy Funk. Because she lived right next to that cemetery. So I'm sure she remembers more of the stories.
Oh my
goodness. About the ghost up there.
Oh. But I understand there's a lady today who takes people through New Hope and shows them all the places where the ghosts are. And
so I understand.
Where there's, what should I say, at least there should be ghosts.
There are lots of nooks and crannies around here that should have ghosts if they don't.
But I'm wondering if this is just simply later commercialism, latter-day commercialism, or if there were some ghosts when
you were
little.
I have no question in my mind that it's strictly commercial.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you say that. I hate to think of my my beautiful New Hope being spooked. Because it's such a pretty town. Oh, dear.
No, don't put this on me.
You worked at General Mills during
General
Motors during the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And what shift did you work? The second shift?
I would work till midnight. And I was talking about transportation earlier, about the trains. It was also an hourly bus that went from Lambertville to Trenton. Service, marvelous service. And during the week I had a ride, there was a carpool, but on Sundays I had to take the bus, and I would come home on a 12:30 bus out of Trenton, come into Lambertville out of the highway, and walk all the way across the bridge to New Hope. It never occurred that anyone would be frightened to walk out on a night. You were perfectly safe. People would bring their chairs, their porch chairs, out in the spring, take mm-hmm. them in the fall. They were perfectly safe on their porches until post-World War II. We played all over town. People cared about each other. You didn't get in trouble. There was somebody always watching you, but it was only because they cared about you. On Halloween, we were all over town. We would dress up and go visit, but we didn't do trick-or-treating. It would never occur to us to go in anybody's house we didn't know. The idea was to see if they could guess who we were,
yes.
not to get loot.
Right.
There were very few people that would give you a treat. It never occurred to us when we were growing up, but we always would dress up and go out. There was a lot of tricking, and there were certain people in town who were very nasty to the children, and they always paid for it on Halloween. But people didn't destroy. For instance, a garden gate would be, a fence gate would be taken down, but it would be very carefully put up on somebody's porch roof or something like that, never destroyed. There were a lot of outside privies then that were knocked over. There was, maybe by today's standard, you would call it vandalism, but it was not truly vandalism because they wouldn't destroy anything. It was just a matter of maybe getting even with somebody that was a little nasty the rest of the year.
That
but
was
nothing malicious was that.
Tell me about Christmas. That's one thing we haven't talked about now. We talked about Halloween and just now, but we've never talked about Christmas. Was it the orgy that we have today? Certainly it wasn't, was it?
No. Christmas was, you made things. You look forward to it, naturally. For us, the big thing, you knew you were growing up when you could go to Midnight Mass, which was in St. John's. Philadelphia Diocese didn't have any, so we didn't have any at St. Martin's for many years.
Mm-hmm.
We would go, and this is my own particular one, we would go to Mass in St. John's. We would come home, we would exchange and open gifts, we would have breakfast. Then we would go to the Mass at sunrise at 5 o'clock, which was another high Mass. Midnight Mass was high Mass, 5 a.m. Mass was high Mass. Then we would come home from Mass and go to bed. Later in the day when we would get up and have dinner, and then maybe we would go visit friends. But it was a family, very much a family thing.
How about
and
presents?
Not commercial, like it is now. There were a great many, I don't know, we never had any money. So there weren't a lot of things. But everybody in town was pretty much in the same boat. Your expectations weren't as high.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a list. You just wondered what you would get. But maybe you would, a girl might want a doll or a boy, a wagon or a bike or something like that. Very often, what happened was that something would be shared. For instance, if there were two boys in the family, you'll say they might get an express wagon or something like that that they
mm-hmm.
would share. Maybe girls would get a tea set, but it was to be shared, and then they would get
mm-hmm.
individual things to go with it. At least that's the way it was in our house.
Mm-hmm.
And you always got some clothes that you needed. You often got a doll that was redressed that
oh.
you had had before with new clothes that someone in the family, an older sibling or your mother would make for you. Very often you would get something that your dad made if he were handy. There
Isn't
were more
lovely?
That and more the meaning of the holiday, a lot of baking, a lot of family togetherness, but not a lot of, you know, travel was not as easy then,
mm-hmm.
so you didn't go great distances or anything.
Right.
It was more a family thing.
It was a family holiday and a religious holiday,
absolutely.
Really.
Yeah, and it was not as blatantly commercial as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing you always did was, one of the big things you did was go out and get your Christmas tree.
Oh.
And you made all your own Christmas decorations and everything. By that I mean you would get your
wreath for your door, mm-hmm. and things like that. You would cut the boughs yourself and make them. Mm-hmm. A great many people would make the strings of popcorn and cranberries for the Christmas tree, too, to decorate it. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of handmade decorations on the tree. And when the children were little, they never saw the tree decorated until they'd get up Christmas morning. I'm going backwards because I already talked about going to midnight mass, mm-hmm. but this is when the children were small. Santa Claus was a very big part of it, and you didn't see any of those things until Christmas morning. So it was very special, yes. And fortunately for some of us, it still is.
What a nice observation.
Halloween.
Rita, I just feel that we can't finish this tape without talking about the 4th of July, because that's my favorite holiday. How about the 4th of July? How would you celebrate that?
Oh, that was sensational. We would have, everybody had their own fireworks. There was not a big commercial display in the area. If we were lucky, I was very lucky to have an older brother that always treated my sister and me, who were the youngest in the family. We had everything. We had even punks to light our fireworks with. We had crackers, we had torpedoes, we had caps. In the evening, we would set them off all during the day, and all the children from the area would come around, so you would hear them snapping and popping all day long.
How about son of a gun?
But the exciting thing, how about what?
Son of a gun. Didn't you have son
of a gun? I don't know what they're
called. Oh, those were the little round things that you could rub on them. The sidewalk. You didn't have
it. I don't remember those, but the thing we loved was the snakes. That you would, they were like a pill, and you would light them, and
yes.
they would come up, the horrible smelling ash would make a snake. We loved those. But after most of the day was gone, we got very impatient for the dark, because then, going back to the Priestie, all the kids in the area would come around, and we would put off our fireworks. Up there, we would have pinwheels, we would have skyrockets, and a variety of things that we could shoot up. And if we had a lot of them, we would take turns. If it were, for instance, a pinwheel, maybe one of the older boys in the area would take it up and tack it to a pole or a tree or something. Mm-hmm. It was very, very special time, and always the flag was out flying until dark. We didn't have parades in town, but we certainly had a lot of noise, and we never worried about the danger of it, because we were not, we were conscious of it, and we were always told to be very careful. And indeed we were. Occasionally somebody would get a slight burn. I know of one accident that was rather severe, but normally speaking, they were very slight, and it was well worth the fun we had.
Oh, how great. And how about, did you have any kind of performances down at the, in front of the playhouse? Didn't you mention something about performances in front of the playhouse, where the...
You're talking
was
about
the
street fair.
Was that the 4th of July?
No,
oh, no, that was the
that
street
was,
fair.
That was the New
was
Hope Street
Was that a summer...
Fair.
Thing?
Every year we had it. When the community association started, it was started many years ago by a man who no longer lives in New Hope, and it's a loss to the town. His name was Charlie Evans. And to raise money for a community association, they had a street fair, which was absolutely sensational. They had a sideshow, but at that time it was in the parking lot at the Logan Inn. At the Playhouse Inn. The Playhouse Inn was not there yet. It was in the Playhouse parking lot. And then after that, it was in the Logan Inn parking lot. There was a sideshow. St. John Terrell, at least one year, was the fire eater and the barker for the sideshow.
Is that when he burned off all his hair?
He burned off his eyebrows and his eyelashes because he put too much gasoline in his mouth.
Oh, dear.
They had dancers, they had snake charmers, they had can-can dancers. They had the most marvelous displays where you could test your skill by hitting people like Hitler and Mussolini. This was about 1940 probably, 38, 40. And they were clever. They were not terribly commercial, but we did make money on them, and everybody worked their tail off to make it successful.
Wasn't that great? Well, I think this is rather interesting that we're finishing this off just at about this time of the year. Here we are, August 1st, 1984, and the street fairs are gone. In its place, we have the Playhouse back in operation. And
the auto show, which is now run by the Community Association.
Yes. And that is going to be this weekend?
No, well, I think that's probably the weekend of around the 12th, I believe.
And it's the antique auto show,
yeah,
in other words.
Which the Community Association uses as their main fundraiser. Many years ago when the Community Association started, it was the little street fair that was such fun.
Oh, my. Well, it's just been delightful talking to you this evening, Rita. I can't tell you how much I appreciate hearing all these wonderful stories.